tell me about the vampire from Cumberland, England.
Well, this is one of the most amazing vampire stories ever told, and it's one of those stories that has a kind of loop within a loop, sort of wheels within wheels thing. It concerned a family named Michael, Edward, and Amelia Cranswell, who took over Croglin Grange, which was up in the little village of Croglin, near Penrith, up in Cumberland. And this place really is worth a visit if any of our listeners are having a holiday in the UK. Go up to Penrith in Cumberland and ask about Croglin Grange and Croglin Village. Now, the Croglin Grange is a very, very old farmhouse. It dates back as far as the building of Carlisle Castle. So it's not even medieval. It really is medieval. It's not Renaissance. It's earlier than that. So we're almost talking about a farmhouse that's been there since Norman times. And the story concerned a family named Fisher. And the Fishers had made some money and decided to move down from Cumberland and go south to London, where their business interests were. And the building that they'd left, this old Croglin Grange and its farm property, was very difficult for them to sell. Nobody wanted in those days to move up to that area near the Lake District. It was bleak and it was cold. It was spectacularly beautiful, but it wasn't the kind of place that you'd like to live if you like sunshine.
I bet it's worth something today, isn't it?
Oh, be worth. I would say we're talking six figures today for that farm.
Oh my gosh.
But anyway, the Fisher family had to let it on a seven-year lease. And the people who took the lease were Amelia Cranswell and her two brothers, Mike and Edward. They'd only been there a few months, and the bedrooms were on the ground floor because it was a single-story old building. And Amelia looks through her bedroom window and sees what she described as something like a walking scarecrow with red eyes coming towards her room. It started with a claw-like hand to pick away the lead from around the old-fashioned lead panes on that window. This hand comes in through the window and undoes the latch, and it begins to enter Amelia's room. She can't take her eyes off it. She's screaming blue murder. She's got her hands behind her back, trying to undo the door without looking. And because everything is back to front with her hands behind her back and terrified by this creature, she gets the door locked and then drops the key when she was trying to turn it the other way. So she's now locked in. Her two brothers are trying to rescue her.
This is like a nightmare.
It is. It's a nightmare scenario. And you really put yourself in the poor girl's position. And her two brothers finally break the door down, but by that time Amelia has been attacked.
Oh, my.
Very badly bitten round the face and throat, which is where the whole idea of vampirism came into this Cranswell story. Now, Amelia recovers and then says, because she's the kind of housekeeper and almost the head of the household, and she says to the boys, we're going to Switzerland, have a few days' convalescence, and then when they're in Switzerland, she says to them, look, we're going to buy a pair of pistols, and we're not giving up the unexpired portion of our lease, we're going back. And they say, well, Amelia, it's up to you. You know, we don't want you hurt again. She says, no, I'm not being scared out of a seven-year lease by whatever that was. So here's a real kind of Joan of Arc lady. She's not going to be pushed around. And she made the plan, too. She'd have made a wonderful general. She said, right, Mike, I want you in the room opposite mine. We want all the bedroom doors open at night. Ed, I want you in the room nearest the door. I want you boys to have one loaded pistol each. And if that thing comes back, Ed, I want you out of that door, cut off its retreat. Mike, I want you beside me with the other gun. Got it?
Hoping the guns would work and be effective, huh?
Yeah, that's the... There's nothing worse than a gun that won't work if you're up against a vampire.
Exactly.
So, it came back. And Amelia's plan worked like a dream. Mike was beside her in seconds with a smoking gun in one hand ready to fire. Ed was out of the front door like a hare. And he fired at point-blank range, hit the thing in the leg. It screamed and ran. He went after it. It disappeared into a tomb and closed the door. Now, Ed has an empty gun, and he knows that that thing is capable of savaging a person and using its teeth. He's not going in there after it on his own. It takes some time. He's shouting for them. Nobody comes. Finally, he thinks, I'm going to have to leave it there and get help. He gets a crowd of friends and neighbors to come. So there's Mike and Ed and some of the young gamekeepers and a coachman or two. And almost like those old horror films where you have a rent-a-crowd scene, you know, where all the village turn up round by Frankenstein's castle. And it's always the climax of the film in those good old horror classics. So when the boys finally go in, supported by their band of friends and neighbors, they find a coffin open in the middle of this tomb. The corpse within it is mummified and has clearly been dead for a century or more. And there's fresh red blood
on my
hands. Yeah. And on the mouth. And the boys think, everybody thinks, vampire. So this long dead corpse is taken to the crossroads, and they go through everything they've ever read and heard in vampire ritual. They actually dismembered it, as well as staking it down. And while they were doing this, one of them said, hey, Ed, you shot him in the leg. Look, here's the pistol ball. Well, that convinced everybody. Now, when Trish and I said there were wheels within wheels on this one. When Trish and I went to investigate this firsthand and to speak to the lady who now lives and farms in Croglin Grange and talk to the villagers and visit the church, we found so many things were wrong. Croglin Grange was two stories, not one. That's the first thing. So there were no bedrooms on the ground floor, or there shouldn't have been. The church was nearly 2 miles away, and there were no vaults of any kind anywhere near it. The only door we found going down was the central heating. And everything, then, the church was wrong. And then we thought to ourselves, well, why on earth, if this happened in about 1870, which was when it was reported to have happened, why were these boys using single-shot pistols when they could so easily have used one of Mr. Colt's very useful six-chambered revolvers or a good Smith & Wesson? So the whole thing seemed very disappointing. Now, the story was recorded, and listeners, if they could get a copy of this, would find this fascinating. It's in a book by Augustus Hare, and it's called, simply, The Story of My Life. Now, Augustus Hare had met Captain Fisher at a wedding celebration when one of the Hare ladies married one of the Fisher boys. And I can imagine Captain Fisher telling the story to Augustus Hare and both of them having quite a lot of champagne. Now, what, as it transpired when we reinvestigated, this hadn't happened in 1870. It had happened sometime after Cromwell. It went back 200 years more